We are Rogue Media Sports.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, and Ed Werder and I coming to you in the aftermath of the Cowboys 40-0 victory over the New York Football Giants. It was an absolute bloodbath. It was embarrassing for the Giants organization. And Ed, it started with like the Giants looking somewhat competent and moving the ball. And I know that was a long time ago, but it sort of adds to the comedy of this that the Giants seem like, oh man, this could get, I mean, they look great on offense.
Yeah, they swept down the field. Daniel Jones had run for like 27 yards, had eluded the rush, made some positive plays. And then all of a sudden, what, they had a false start in the red zone. Then they had a bad snap that Daniel Jones winds up falling on for a big loss. Micah Parsons tapping him down. And then they blocked the field goal, run it back for a touchdown. And then they score on a defensive touchdown. And pretty soon, the game's totally out of hand. And I think it's the first time in Cowboys history that the first two touchdowns of their season were scored by defensive players, both defensive backs in this particular case. So pretty amazing feat to start the game. I don't know how many times a team wins 40-0 and it really has almost nothing to do with the offense.
Yeah, in the post game, NBC grabbed Tony Pollard and Dak Prescott. Dak made the point. He's like, I'm not really sure why you guys are having me on here.
It's all about, in TV, it's all about who do you want to interview, not really who was the player of the game. Because I think the player of the game was maybe Trayvon Diggs, maybe Micah Parsons. I mean, Diggs knocked the ball loose twice for turnovers, neither of which was an interception by him. No. I mean, have we ever seen Diggs hit like that?
No. What, he doesn't really hit, he just punches. And he's a great puncher, and he knows how to dislodge the football. And, Ed, the one thing after quite a week for you that I need to ask you to start tonight's podcast, and everybody's been waiting on the Doomsday Podcast. It's probably not only it's a good name for podcast. It's probably the most well-known Cowboys podcast in the NFL, maybe the best NFL podcast. But, Ed, let me ask you, after the Cowboys 40-0 win, do you believe?
I'm going to respond with a question of my own, and it's going to be the same one I posed to the man who asked that one of me at TCU a little over a week ago. What exactly are you asking me what I believe in? What do you want me to believe in? How do you know I don't already believe?
That's right. To which he said, you don't believe.
After a while, he finally tapped the table and said, he's read all that bull junk that I've written, which, oh, by the way, I've been a writer in 30 years.
Yeah.
And there was no bull junk for him to reference. And so the question remains open as to what I believe. Do I believe in Mike McCarthy being able to take this team to a Super Bowl? Do I believe in Deion Sanders winning a national championship from the University of Colorado? What is it you're asking me?
Well, by the way, you were the news last week. Now, the former head coach of my alma mater is in the news because they beat Nebraska and Matt Rhule, and they always show up with receipts. And so now they've said that Matt Rhule disrespected them by saying he doesn't allow cameras in his locker room all the time and cameras to follow him around. And that was apparently very disrespectful to the father of Shedeur Sanders. And so now Matt Rhule has been put on notice.
You know what I do believe?
What's that?
With all my heart, I believe it's time for Frito to play the music.
Frito, please play the music. All right, and there it is. And when you hear that music, it's the start of another season. And we, Ed and I, read all your tweets. We see it, and we know, and we fully appreciate everybody who gets excited about our podcast. And that's why we stay up late. We put in ridiculous hours to bring you the Doomsday Podcast from Frito Nation Productions in far North Dallas. As the Cowboys beat up on the New York Giants, and Ed, we Cowboys were favored. There was some thought, well, I mean, how much could it hurt to not have Tyler Smith? We saw an hour and a half or 2 hours before the games. Ed, you were at the NFL opener the other night. They ended up being upset by the Lions. I really enjoyed your coverage of that. But you came off that and then started kind of pouring yourself back into the Cowboys. But in the Cowboys, I mean, the great thing about tonight is I think Chuma Adoga played pretty well, but it was hard to really know because the Cowboys didn't even really need that much from the offense. It was 16-0 based on something special teams and the defense did, and then it was 19, and then it was 26, and honestly, at some point I looked away from the screen, and it was suddenly 33. And I'm a little bit unclear, like on that third touchdown. Ed, could you bring me up to date?
Was that the Kevontae Turpin touchdown?
Kevontae goes scrambling into the end zone, and they want to get him more involved in space. They did,
and they have. Yeah,
and that was kind of nice.
So I think first of all, let's put this in some kind of context for everybody. You know, this was Mike McCarthy's first Week One win as a Cowboys coach. In the three previous seasons, he had lost his opener twice to Tom Brady, obviously. And winning as decisively as they did, the Cowboys became the fifth team in NFL history to open their season with a shutout of 40 or more points on the road. Prior to the Cowboys doing it against the Giants tonight, the last team to achieve it was the Steelers in 1999 at the Browns. The Cowboys' 40-0 season-opening road victory is both the largest shutout victory in Dallas's 63-year history of playing professional football and the largest in Mike McCarthy's 17 years as an NFL head coach, his largest shutout victory. And I think you mentioned it before, in 1995, the last year the Cowboys won a Super Bowl, they beat the Giants in the Week 1 season opener 35-0 at the Meadowlands, and that was the game in which cornerback Kevin Smith tore his Achilles tendon, and ultimately the Cowboys signed Deion Sanders on their way to the Barry Switzer Super Bowl win. But, I mean, the defense tonight allowed 161 yards, created three turnovers, scored a touchdown, and had seven sacks in the game. Micah Parsons was asked after the game about the statement the Cowboys defense made tonight. He said, "I think we're making a statement that we've been trying to make. We're the best defense in the National Football League," is what he said. And the other thing I wanted to say about the defense is Dan Quinn. I mean, how fortunate are the Cowboys that after the disastrous season that Mike Nolan had, in which they allowed the most points in franchise history, you know, Mike McCarthy hired Dan Quinn, who the Cowboys had beaten by 40 points earlier that season. You know, I know this week that Quinn put up on the board for his defense their priorities. And the first one was the ball, followed by about 8 exclamation points. Then it was tackling, space, and listen to this one, feel our speed and hitting. I didn't think the Cowboys had really been a big hitting defense for a defense that, you know, has led the NFL in turnovers the last 2 years, which only the Steelers have done in the 70s. Last time that's happened, they did it 3 years in a row. The Cowboys trying to equal that feat. But I really never got the sense the Cowboys were a big hitting team They could, like you said, punch the ball out. But I thought there were some ferocious hits out there on that field tonight in that game. And, you know, I just think Dan Quinn deciding in January, surprisingly for the second year in a row, not taking a head coaching job when he almost certainly could have had one, and deciding to return to Dallas because he felt like he had unfinished business here, and that, you know, he swore his complete focus was going to be help Dallas play championship football in 2023. And they're certainly off to that kind of start.
Yeah, it's remarkable. The Giants, to your point, were held to 171 total yards. The indignity of Daniel Jones, who, by the way, has been paid a lot of money to stay around there, and quite honestly, they were at some point like, well, he played pretty well. I guess we need to give him some money. I mean, they kept him out there until like a minute or two left in the game. I mean, it almost to me was kind of embarrassing. The Giants end up in this game with 63 passing yards. They finish with 108 rushing yards. And of course, they scored zero. And on the third down efficiency, 31%, and then Ed, the only category you could kind of, you know, they won, okay? And this is an old Parcells favorite. Because the Cowboys kept returning things for touchdowns, like interceptions that were poke free, you know, by Diggs, or a Wanye Thomas block punt, which was brought back from the new guy, Noah, from Miami. The Giants did win tonight, Ed, the time of possession battle with 33 minutes and 28 seconds.
And they did a lot with all that time they had with the ball.
They did.
You know, we were talking about Quinn and the takeaways and what a point of emphasis that's been and how successful they've been in that aspect of the game. This was the 22nd game that the Cowboys have had under Dan Quinn and he's only been here for 3 years. His 22nd multiple takeaway game. That's three more than any other team in the NFL in that span. Seven sacks, three takeaways in a game for the first time since 1992. Daniel Jones, 104 yards passing, career low in a game in which he had 15 or more passes. And the Cowboys got pressure on him on 55% of his 42 passing attempts. That's the highest rate that Jones has faced in his career. And guess what? The other two times he faced similar amounts of pressure, his previous career highs, both against the Cowboys and Dan Quinn's defense. So the three highest pressure games Daniel Jones has played in his career have all come against Dan Quinn's defense. I think Dan Quinn has an idea about how to beat Daniel Jones and the Giants.
Yeah, and Ed, I think I did also see, and you brought some great historical perspective, but the one they've played the Giants, from what I can recall, Ed, probably more than any other team in the history of the Cowboys in season openers. I believe it's 12 in the history of the franchise going back to 1960. They've had 12 season opening games against the Giants, and they improved to 11-1 in those games. And I guess I remember some Giants wins, but as I think about it, like the opening of the brand new AT&T Stadium was actually the second week of the season for the Cowboys.
It was their first home game.
And it was their first home game in the new stadium, and Eli put it on them and then signed the wall after he beat them in somewhat of a shootout, I recall. But that the Giants do not fare well against the Cowboys. And I think, Ed, today, you know, the other team, it's going to be between, we all believe it's going to be between the Cowboys and the Eagles and the NFC East. And the Eagles got out to a nice lead over the Patriots and then had to hold on. Actually, were leading 25-20. Patriots tried to make it 25-22, but the Patriots actually came back and got into that game. And so this is going to be a fascinating season because I think, Ed, right now, again, after week one, based on week one and all we thought going into this, the best teams in the NFC, San Francisco looked incredible today. Eagles hung on. Cowboys win in a blowout. Who am I missing? I mean, those are probably the three best teams.
Yeah, the Rams won handily at Seattle, but I don't think anybody thinks the Rams are a force to contend with at this point, especially with that, Cooper Kupp, and they're sort of in a rebuilding mode, even though they have Matthew Stafford as their quarterback. I guess Green Bay was impressive with Jordan Love against the Bears, but the Bears have lost, 11 straight games now under Matt Eberflus, a former Cowboys assistant coach, and Justin Fields doesn't seem to have figured out the passing game much more. So, yeah, in the NFC, I think those are the three teams, and until the Cowboys played, I think most people would say the 49ers had the most impressive season opening performance, winning at Pittsburgh in a very dominant fashion, and Brock Purdy playing exceptionally well, their defense limiting Pittsburgh. But I think what the Cowboys did, I think we fully expected this talented Cowboys team is going to win a lot of games in the regular season. And you have to do that to be able to prove yourself successful in the postseason. And that's where this team ultimately is going to be judged. But, I think this team looks more talented than Mike McCarthy's last two teams. And both of those teams won 12 regular season games, but only one game in the playoffs. I would say that everybody scrutinizes intensely how Dak Prescott plays. And he won his, 11th consecutive game against the Giants. And that matches Roger Staubach, Hall of Famer Roger Staubach's record for success, sustained success, consecutive wins against a single opponent. When the Cowboys play defense like they did tonight, make the other quarterback play like Daniel Jones did, it didn't really matter what Dak Prescott does. So all we talked about all offseason, Mike McCarthy being the play caller, what was the offense going to look like? I don't think we really got much of a sense of that because of the early lead that they had, that the offense really had nothing to do with. I would say that I did like some of the bunch formations, some of the pick plays, like the one that led to CeeDee Lamb being wide open for a big third down. Mm-hmm. And then what you mentioned earlier, last year they kept telling us how they were going to get Kevontae Turpin on the field in offense and get him involved as a receiver because of his speed, and they never really did. And Mike McCarthy did that tonight. He was on the field a lot, and he was targeted quite often and scored a touchdown, as we had acknowledged earlier. But it doesn't really matter when the defense is that overwhelming. The offense doesn't have to do a lot. And I guess credit to Mike McCarthy, an offensive coach and now the play caller again, for recognizing in the construction of this team that it's a defensive-oriented football team and playing that way.
Yeah, I think that has been recognized. And another from another kind of warder-like stat from Ed from ESPN Stats Information, a group that you utilize on a pretty regular basis. Cowboys are the fifth team to open their season with a shutout of 40-plus points on the road, according to ESPN Stats Information. The last team to do this was the Steelers in 1999 at the Browns. You were just talking about, what this is and how many teams are able to do this on the road. It's pretty rare that they're able to do that. And tonight, I just have to think that, boy, Jerry is going to be excited. It left the broadcast tonight a lot of time to kind of vamp and show a lot of different things and talk about a lot of different things. And Ed, they had some nice things to say about Gil Brandt, who played such a huge role in the formation of the Cowboys and the brand that they became. And he's a guy both you and I got to know really well over the years. And I think, you know, if Cowboys fans want to think of this huge 40-0 win honoring Gil Brandt, I think that's an okay way to look at this. And Ed, a remarkable life. And you and I haven't really had a chance to talk about it since his passing recently.
Yeah, I mean, what were the numbers? I posted them on Twitter right after he passed away, I don't know, a week, 10 days ago, just about the incredible number of Hall of Fame Cowboys players that were connected to him that he brought into the organization. And many of them were either late round draft picks or, you know, undrafted players like, you know, Cliff Harris, or a player who had a unique situation like Roger Staubach at his, you know, commitment to the Navy. And Drew Pearson was an undrafted player too. I believe who was actually a position change. Bob Hayes was another player who was a track star, really, more than he was a football player when he came to Dallas. So Gil was very imaginative, very innovative, and he was really the guy who created modern scouting in the NFL, not just for the Cowboys, but created it. A concept that the entire league wound up applying on a team-by-team basis. So, yeah, he was definitely a giant in not only Cowboys history, but in NFL history. And I believe his service is sometime this week. And I can imagine the roll call of Hall of Fame football players and NFL dignitaries who will be there and be speaking fondly of Gil Brandt.
When the tweet I think you put out there that I recall, I think the number was around 15 Pro Football Hall of Famers. And then, of course, he worked with other people that are now in the Hall of Fame, and then became known in the media as well with the NFL Network and NFL.com. So we certainly thinking about Gil and his family and his wife, Sarah, this evening. All right, and as you said, I thought that was interesting too. What Micah Parsons said, I'll reiterate that. Ed, he said, "I think we're making a statement that we've been trying to make. We're the best defense in the National Football League." And Ed, you know, they're so worried about him. Like, he can kind of come looping in. He can line up. It really doesn't matter where he is. They're scared to death of him. And so Osa Digazua had two sacks. Dorrance Armstrong, guy we interviewed at training camp, two more sacks. It just right up and down the line, and they end up with seven sacks. Micah gets one, the first one. And it's always kind of funny to watch him, Ed, because sometimes it's violent. Sometimes he gets to him so quickly, he just kind of throws him down like a little rag doll. And that's a big, huge guy. Daniel Jones is, what, 6'4", 6'5". And he just comes running by him, takes him by the waist, and just kind of slings him to the ground like a you know, just a little toy or something. And that really set the tone for the rest of the night, although the tone had already been set. I mean, by the time the defense got revved up, the Cowboys already had a 16-0 lead.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, about Micah Parsons, I had this thought at training camp when we were out there for a week and listened to him and watched him just dominate about every drill. You know, I've covered I began covering the Cowboys in 1989, and we haven't seen many players like him. He's unique in his ability to play, you know, hybrid roles. He obviously has a great creative mastermind who knows how to use him, and Dan Quinn, his partner. But we just don't see many guys who have his talent and his that kind of drive. You know, when he stands up there and says, "I don't just want to be in the Hall of Fame. I want to be in the upper echelon of the Hall of Famers." I mean, being in the Hall of Fame is not good enough for him. And finishing second 2 years in a row in the voting for NFL Defensive Player of the Year, his first two seasons in the NFL, is not good enough for him. And, you know, he really devoted himself to his off-season training and, you know, boxing and, you know, changing his diet and all of the things that he's done to try to make himself just slightly better than he was the previous 2 years is just really remarkable. And he's not the only one that can rush the passer, but he certainly, his presence creates a lot of opportunities for everybody else. In fact, you know, after the game tonight, Dak said, you know, I've talked about it all spring through training camp, understanding the pass rush we're going against in practice and just watching that come alive against another team and another quarterback. It was exciting. It made it easier for us on our side. And I think, I mean, I know there's going to be a lot about Aaron Rodgers next week. You know, he's making his Jets debut, playing for the first time for a team other than the Packers tomorrow night on Monday Night Football against the Buffalo Bills in a big AFC East game. And then on a short week, the Jets come here to Dallas and play the Cowboys. There's going to be a lot of, you know, talk about Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers and their history together. And we saw that last year when McCarthy went back to Green Bay for the first time. But I think the big showdown in that game is going to be two defenses that both think they're the best defense in football. And we'll hear it again when the Cowboys play the 49ers, because the 49ers last year led the NFL in fewest points allowed and fewest yards allowed. The Cowboys led the NFL in takeaways. Well, the Jets think they're the bully too. And so I think that's going to be a real litmus test. I think the Cowboy defense, as well as they play tonight, they'll be more determined to play even better next week against a better quarterback and to show up the Jets defense. Now, I don't know. Maybe the Jets defense will play better against Cowboys offense than the Cowboys defense plays against Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. But I think that that's going to be the mindset going in for both these teams. That's really their identity right now.
Yeah. And it's going to be, you know, you brought up that Brady, they saw Brady in the opening game previous 2 years, had some success, at least numbers wise, not maybe winning, obviously, but to have you just step up so far in quarterback play from what we saw tonight to playing against Rodgers and the weapons that he has. It's going to be a lot of fun, and that's a great thing about the NFL. You can point to, I was looking at the schedule tonight, NBC said, okay, we got our next, it's like all these networks, Ed, they live for their next primetime Cowboys game, right? And like, that's all, they're like, well, this game stunk. I mean, it's the Cowboys, so at least the ratings were probably good for the first half. But it's like, okay, our next chance to get them is like week 4 or whatever it is. We got a night game, and who is it, Ed? I saw the matchup, and I was like, oh, dang, that's good. That's really good.
That's San Francisco. The Cowboys are at San Francisco,
that's
week 6.
Yeah. Week 6. They have that game.
I think it's week 6, yeah.
They have that game, and that'll be huge, especially given what we're seeing from Brock Purdy. It doesn't look like they're slowing down. They've got a great defense as well. Now, Ed, there's so many announcements we're going to be making throughout the season. I wanted to tell you the first of many announcements we'll be making. And as always, we gather throughout the year different sponsors. And of course, one in particular, as we get closer to the holidays, comes very strong. But we just had a renewal, Ed, and Marable Homes, which now, in addition to sort of taking over Lake Highlands and now moving into Highland Park and University Park, has started building luxury homes on the banks of Cedar Creek Lake, where I grew up, and or down that. And of course, I didn't grow up in a luxury home, but I was kind of in Kaufman, the gateway to Cedar Creek. It sounded like that when I was saying that. I was not a child of wealth, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, my dad was.
But you are one now, right?
That's right. I've grown into it. But Marable Homes, tremendous job, gorgeous homes. And Ed, since we're doing a lot of video now, thanks to Frito and thanks to these beautiful green screens that we have, throughout the season, I'm going to start showing some of these homes. And there's a great legacy involved with Marable Homes, because they, part of how they got their start was they got to, they were great friends, and one of their supporters was the Murkison family. And that, of course, the sons of the former Cowboys owner, Clint Murkison. And I just think that's a cool story. And I'm so happy to have them back. And that's Blake and Amy Marable. So, Ed, if you would give the Marable family a nice welcome back.
Are they our first presenting sponsor to return for a second season?
Let's not focus on that. I think we've certainly had a lot.
I'm thrilled to have them back. They're great sponsors, and I can't wait to see you act as, I don't know, what's that guy's name who does the Beverly Hills house tours on Bravo or whatever it is, Josh something, big money dude.
Yeah, Mario Lopez. No, I think he does something else.
But you'll kind of be in that role where you're kind of taking people through these homes, and those will be fun to see.
Listen, if the Marables ask me to start kind of hosting open houses on the weekends, I'll do it. By golly.
Maybe people could walk into these incredible homes and find us there in the den doing the Doomsday podcast.
Now that, come to an open house this week. And now the thing about they build these brand new, beautiful luxury homes. So there's not always an opportunity for an open house, you know, because they're kind of building them
custom
from scratch. Custom. Yeah, custom. But, yeah. You know, like an open something, like an open floor plan day. And you and I will be there to kind of greet people and say, let us tell you about these floor plans.
And I'll park the cars and you give them the tour.
Ed Werder, celebrity valet. I like that. Well, I think you and I would have a good valet service. Marable Homes, the best place to buy a very expensive home. No. A luxury home. And quite honestly, the service and the craftsmanship is amazing. Ed, it's when I go off script, it's a problem. It is time, though, and we need to work him in because he's become a valued member, and we've put him through like a 4-year probation period, but we've decided after that he will return to the Doomsday Podcast. It is time for something we call Stretch Plays with Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys scout and coach and former University of Texas tight end. Stretch, first of all, welcome back to the Doomsday Podcast, and just in general, a tremendous start for the Cowboys. And let's start a place that has been much maligned by us, by you. In the past, we were a little bit tough on Bones Fossil. I think he's grown on you. I think his antics now you find kind of humorous, and I think you've grown to appreciate the man. And the block field goal return for a touchdown, what a way to start a season and Stretch, the Cowboys never really look back from there.
Yeah, whenever you can get an advantage in that area, it's something you work on all through camp. It's something that you wanted to see done. I mean, you know, today Sean Payton tries to run a surprise onside kick. You want to be able early in the year to kickstart your football team through special teams. And then throughout the year, you always want to be able to tilt the field with your special teams. In other words, you're always going to the short end of the field. You're kicking the ball deep and causing them to take it the length of the field for drives. And I think any time that you can step up, you can block, you know, you got in a situation where they – shot the gap and were able to block that kick and then scooping it, scoring it, and it's a whole nother story. And so you can tell it's something that they worked on. It's something that they practiced. And I think you have to give credit to Bones Fossil. I think you have to give credit to him going out and finding a kicker in the USFL that, you know, albeit he missed the first extra point right there. I mean, he came back and kicked the ball pretty well, kicked the ball out of the end zone. When you're not having to pay excessive money to get a kicker, to get it, you know, to get a guy to step up and hit it through the pipes. I saw him, you know, scouting in the USFL. And so, yeah, good for him for stepping up and signing that young man. And then I think obviously did a great job schematically with blocking that kick and then picking it up and scoring with it. You got to give the special teams an A also because of how they handled the football in those wet conditions. So, I mean, you got to give, you know, as tough as it is. Yeah, and I know maybe he'll go buy him some of those extra wristbands over there to wear on the sidelines. You got to give him an A.
Man grew up being a ball boy at those Raiders practices. Loves that Southern California area, also Northern California, some of those training camps. And I love his enthusiasm talking about bones, fossil. Stretch, people love the way you give grades. It's hard to grade anybody poorly tonight. There were some things maybe on offense that were a tad shaky at times. I think the tight ends had a couple of drops that certainly if it weren't such a blowout, we might take a closer look at something like that. But let me bring up the O-line. I, along with a lot of people, a little bit worried about what it would look like without Tyler Smith. I got to say, number 71, Chuma Edoga, was in there and looked fine to me. I mean, is he as good as Tyler? Heavens no. But I thought Tyron hung in there. He had to come out of the game once, came trotting right back onto the field. What did you make of the O-line and just the overall running game, what we saw of it?
Yeah, I tell you what I like about, you know, these type of situations when you start thinking about, okay, you got to put a grade on guys or you're having to evaluate guys, is when they know you're running the football and you can still run the football, you can impose your will, you can do some things. You know, they were able to put Turpin in the backfield, get him a touchdown. They got the young kid Deuce in there. I think that what you're seeing is a group that said, hey, we didn't get to play a lot during the preseason, so we're going to have to come out here and really get after it and be physical. And I think that's what you saw them do. You saw them play very physical up front. It was good to see Zach Martin in there. I mean, he sealed the guy one side so hard inside for absolutely a walk-in touchdown. I like that they went unbalanced one time. I showed that tonight on WFAA. You know, they went unbalanced and were able to toss that ball, get it in for a touchdown. So the point I'm making is all of that gives the other team things that they have to work on. And I really believe that's really effective. Here's the other thing is Mike Solari coming in here as the offensive line coach. He's a very experienced offensive line coach. He's more demanding than, say, a Joe Philbin was, who was here previously. Now, I'm not casting stones at Joe Philbin, and I'm not pumping up one way or the other. I'm telling you that you can tell that they're coached a little different. The meeting room runs a little different. And with how Mike Solari is doing some things, I think you can see this offensive line continue to make strides. You know, Ferguson has got, like you said, he's got to get better in routes. He dropped the stick route that, I mean, Schultz would have caught. Those are things that in critical games you've got to be able to move the chains. Hendershot went up for a ball in the end zone, and I mean, he acted like he'd never had a ball thrown at him in all his time in Indiana and last year here with the Cowboys. So I think all of that will clean itself up. And obviously, when you have to play the speed of the game with your starting quarterback, you know, those things will work themselves out. So it is hard to come down on them from a grading standpoint. I thought really the offense, when you look at even Pollard, you look at Dowdle, I thought they just did really what they needed to do to win the football game. And I believe, Matt, that it may be that way this year. I mean, I really do believe that if the Cowboy offense can just not turn the football over, it's okay to punt every once in a while, run some play action, run some unbalanced, run some seven-man, some eight-man protections. I like the, I like the addition of Cook. I mean, I think, I think that he's, Brandon Cooks is going to be a great addition. So I like where they're going with the offense. It's just going to take some time for them to settle in.
All right. Cooks did draw a big pass interference penalty down the field. CD, you were talking about him, 4 targets, 4 catches, 77 yards. Dak goes in Pollard, 14 carries, 70 yards, couple of touchdowns. Dak, 13 for 24, 143 yards. As you would say, Stretch, pretty workmanlike, but did what he needed to do. No glaring mistakes, distributed the ball, and I think that was, you know, I think that was pretty good. Stretch, I got to ask you about, you know, like, it's remarkable that you could be missing Wilson and then Jordan Lewis, your slot guy, your starting slot guy, and you know, have be kind of down in those defensive backs, and you're always kind of asking, okay, who has to step up now? Deron Bland with a 22-yard return for an interception. Gilmore has an interception, the veteran, and then Trayvon forces a fumble and then forces that INT. I stretch for a team that we've talked about some of the deficiencies in the secondary. That's pretty great thing to be deep enough to where McQuamu, I mean, it just doesn't really matter where you go. You're getting really nice performances from all over. And I was trying to think, okay, wait, who's 14 now? And Marquise Bell, who's kind of a safety linebacker hybrid, made a big play tonight. I just thought after what we've seen in the DBs in past years, pretty impressive group, it seems.
Yeah, and I think the key that you touched on is the depth. I mean, this football team has got depth. And the key is, in my mind, too, is how they roll the defensive line in there. Now, I'm going to make a point here because I think it really needs to be said early on in this football season, and that is when you add Stephon Gilmore and you add one of the best corners in the league to one of the best corners in the league, and we could sit here and rank them, you know, however you want to rank them across the league, I believe the Cowboys have two of the top 12, maybe possibly 10 corners in the league. Then you have Deron Bland, who is a physical guy that can go in and play nickel. All you need to do really is cover that guy an extra half second. All you need to do is make him stem a route one more step one way or have to release a certain way because you've jammed it. When you do that, that creates opportunity for sacks. That creates indecision with a quarterback. That creates a defensive line who can now roll in there and they can roll those guys in there and keep coming after the quarterback. Because let's face it, the guys that get paid in the NFL are the quarterback, obviously, the guy that protects the quarterback's blind side. Defensively, the guy that can cover and sack the quarterback. That is really how the salary cap lines up. And when you look at how the Cowboys can roll, you make a point. Yeah, they got some guys in the secondary. But I think more impressive than that is they've got 8 defensive linemen that they can roll in there. And we're not even talking about Smith yet, the first round draft pick. I mean, you've got guys on top of guys right now. And I think that's going to be the key for the Cowboys is they do have depth. They can cover you. And anytime you can do that, you're going to cause indecision in the quarterback. He holds the ball a half a second. Your pass rush gets there. I thought it was – it really is. I'm going to step out on a limb here and say, hey, I'm going to give the pro scouting department of the Cowboys an A, because when you can add Gilmore and you can add Cooks on the offensive side, 2 highly impact players, and then you create from the scouting department the college side, you've got all this depth from a defensive line standpoint. You got to give some credit to those guys. And obviously how the Cowboys have drafted and how they put this defensive team together, because that's going to be how they're going to win this year. They're going to win because I believe they'll throttle people defensively. That doesn't mean, you know, every game they're going to be able to do that, but they're going to create turnovers. They're going to create sacks. They're going to get after you. And I think that's what the defensive coordinator wants to do. And I mean, really, you got to give all of that group, including the scouting department, and hey, it's as impressive as showing from a defense. I mean, you look at Brian Daboll you know, he was so frustrated. He didn't have any idea what to call. I mean, he's running the quarterback late in the fourth quarter because he doesn't know how to number up and even be able to block the guys running the damn quarterback. So, I mean, hey, kudos to the Cowboys, their organization, how it's set up and how they've structured this defense. And I know we're early in the year and you don't want to overreact, but when you go just throttle somebody and just, you know, leave them with nothing, to me, that speaks volumes about where you are as a football team.
Yeah, Daboll's like, even his, you know, weather gear, his just didn't seem to be, you know, whisking any of that water away. I thought he was having some trouble there. Very, very, a lot of, taking on a lot of water. To your point, Stretch, Dorrance Armstrong and Osa Odigizuwa combined for 5 tackles for loss and 4 sacks. Now that's, I mean, that's a group. Golston had a sack, Lawrence had a sack, and of course Micah had a sack. It was a masterful performance, and that's what you do when you get a team. You know what I kind of like too, Stretch? Can you remember when they had like a pretty bad Packers team last year on the road, and they were up like 14-0, might have been up 17-3 or 21-3 or something, and they came back, let them, and they got beat. And in this game, there was never a doubt. It was 33-0 early in the third quarter, and it was just all academic from there. And to me, that's a sign of a mature team that is that can finish that off and eliminate any hope. And those Giants fans had all left the building, and the Cowboys were able to take that venue over.
Well, no question. And you know, I mean, it was impressive. I mean, it really was as impressive a defensive showing maybe as I've ever seen. I mean, we went in there in 95, beat them, I think, 35-0 on Monday Night Football. But I don't think it was as impressive as a defensive performance and what you saw tonight from the Cowboys team. So I'm really, really, you're a fan of the Cowboys. You got to be pleased with what you saw. I mean, you got to start buying some blue Kool-Aid and you got to start drinking it up, Mosley.
Maribel Holmes, by the way, our second year in a row, Stretch, sponsor. And we've got so many folks lining up, wanting to be a part of this thing. Thank you so much. And I happened to see a tweet out there this week from an organization called Texas Private School Media. And they were talking about a young quarterback, junior quarterback named Colby Smith, who comes into the game and rips a 50-something yard touchdown and really, really performed well. Big, big dude. And Stretch, that happens to be your number one son, so I wanted to congratulate you. And that's always very exciting, man, on Friday Night Lights when you see one of your kid go out there and perform like that. That's a pretty neat feeling. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, it really, you know, obviously he's changed my life, and it was great to, you know, it's great to watch him, and it's really fun as a dad to step back and it's fun to talk to him because he thinks his dad doesn't know jack about football, and that's the way it's supposed to be. I just want to be a dad and be up there cheering and rooting him on. But I appreciate you. I appreciate you giving him a little love. Yeah. And you know, Mosley, tomorrow, it's what is it? It's about, we're taping right now at about 12:30. I got to get up at 5 and take him to practice. So you make sure and leave your phone on because I'm gonna call your giblet ass at 5 o'clock and get you out of bed now.
All right. And I hope you'll say some of the same things to him that you say to me. You're always trying to get me to get a haircut, and Colby has a pretty nice head of hair. Let me just say that.
You look pretty good. You look pretty good tonight, Mosley. What are you using? Are you using one of those paddle brushes? Is that how you get that stuff to kind of have that flow like that?
This ain't pert.
This ain't head and shoulders,
buddy.
I hear you. You look like it looks like something that looks like something Paul Mitchell's put together. So good for you.
Paul Mitchell, know him well and have loved his products. In fact, he makes Bedhead, and I like to rub that stuff in. It really, God, you've sent Mark Frito Friedman into a sneezing attack. He got to laughing and sneezing the whole thing.
Big fan of Paul Mitchell stretch.
Yeah. And I, can you see Mosley with a handful of that Iowa Pooey shampoo scrubbing it down? Just trying to draw you a picture, Frito.
I'd rather not look at that picture.
Oh, it's good stuff. Stretch, thank you. And another great episode of Stretch Plays. All right, there it was. And hard to find too much fault. Stretch used to really get after Bones Fossil. And it's not... I don't advise that these days. Bones, Ed, let's break down that one play. You know, in a 40-0 win, you don't really like go play by play, but man, that you talk about, here are the Giants, and they make the mistake down there, but they're gonna go up 3-0 and they're gonna kick that field goal, and we're thinking, oh, who knows? Maybe the Giants will hang around for a while. And Wanye Thomas comes just almost kind of like one of those old Seattle-type kick blocker. Who was that? Browning and some of those guys that were so great. He comes rolling through that line, and it was the easiest block ever. I mean, the guy never had a chance. He basically blocked it with his chest. And then the guy they trade Kelvin Joseph for, of all people.
From Miami.
Ed, when he first picked that, I think it was number 19. Yeah, Ignop.
Noah. Yeah, there you go.
Ignominy.
I think you said it right the first time.
Ignominy. Yeah.
Returned 58 yards for a touchdown. And you know, the thing I noticed when I watched the replay is Thomas, you know, kind of splits two blockers, kind of leaps through there. And like you said, just kind of took it off the guy's foot easily. And then he makes the block that allows his teammate to take it 58 yards. He knocks the guy who's going to get Noah Igbinoghe probably make the tackle. You don't think I got that right?
Nothing.
I mean, when I saw we traded a guy with a very common name, the Cowboys traded a guy with a very common name, Kelvin Joseph, for a guy with this name, I, as a broadcaster, choked a little. I did not want to have to say this guy's name on TV. So I thought, well, if he has a career like Kelvin Joseph, I'll probably never have to mention him. But,
yeah.
But here we are. But yeah, I thought he made a great play on that, in not only blocking the kick, but then blocking the would-be tackler who probably could have prevented the score from happening and the Cowboys from taking that early lead. And it was unfortunate that Aubrey, the new kicker, then went all Brett Maher and choked his first extra point. But he kicked a clean game after that. So when we go to the Star on Wednesday, we won't find the kicker with his bags packed on the porch like we did so often back in 1989. I'm telling you, back in 1989, we would go cover the game on Sunday. And on Monday morning, we'd drive to Valley Ranch. And they had a little, you know, carport, little canopy out the back. In a parking lot.
Yeah.
And after every loss, there would be five or six guys standing there with their bags packed, waiting for the hotel shuttle, take them to the airport. Their careers were over.
How would you handle that when you would see them? Would you try to go up and visit with them or kind of do a little exit interview type situation?
I tried not to make any eye contact with them. I knew they felt terrible and, obviously never going to need them again. If they couldn't play on a 1-15 Cowboys team, they weren't probably going to make another appearance anywhere in the league. So
it's
I big time, but basically I had no time for these people.
Yeah. It reminds me of a time, and even into when I started covering the team in like 2003, I mean, there was a time where we could Valley Ranch, where if you need to grab somebody, you could either wait for them at the exit or the entrance, because there's only one way into Valley Ranch. Or you could literally go back in that back lot where the players parked and just kind of wait on people. And we did that to Parcells. Archer and I waited on him one day, and he finally came out, and it was like, are you going to retire? Are you going to keep coaching? And he decided to go ahead and coach in 2006. I think he would live to regret that. But you could kind of stake people out back there. And Ed, the time you're talking about, I bet y'all like basically parked with the players back there. Like it wouldn't,
correct.
It wouldn't shock me if y'all literally had lunch with them. Like that's about how it was in the late 80s, early 90s, maybe until they started winning Super Bowls, right?
Yeah, when I first came here in 1989, once they had the roster finalized, the PR department gave you a list with everybody's home phone number. I mean, nobody had cell phones back then. They gave you a list of everybody's home phone. I think Tom Landry was in the phone book, in the Dallas phone book. Anybody could look him up and call Tom Landry. I don't know if he'd get on the phone. His wife might prevent that from happening. But it was a different place in time than it is now.
There was some player, this might have predated you even, in that when Landry was still coaching, and it was like his name was like Manny something, Manny Hazard or Manny. It was a U of H defensive back or something. And one time, Calishaw was desperately trying to get a scoop on this player, and literally it was like a very end of the roster type guy. And the story goes, at some point he was calling Landry at home to try to track this down. And so I think Tom the next day told Tex or whoever, and he said, give this one to Calishaw. He's been all over the story.
And it was of nominal interest to anyone. Nominal interest to Calishaw, of no interest to anyone else.
Tom thought Calishaw had earned that story, perhaps. It is the Doomsday Podcast on a victory Sunday night. As we tape this, it is, it's midnight. It has just struck midnight on Monday morning, so we probably ought to wrap this up. Ed, is the Cowboys get ready to face a team, and they'll be on a short week now, the Jets will. But Aaron Rodgers, the Jets, home game, game of the week type situation, 3:25 kickoff, I believe. You were talking about just the two defenses, everything, but this is kind of a fun kind of, clash of the Titans. I hesitate to say Super Bowl preview, but after the game, I mean, it's a fun kind of measuring stick type deal to go, okay, both these teams have pretty big aspirations. Let's see where we stand after week two.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, like I said, because of Aaron Rodgers alone, it's going to be hyped up. He's either going to be coming here after beating the Bills and winning his Jets debut, or he's going to be coming here looking for his first victory as a New York quarterback. I think this will be a much better New York team than the one that the Cowboys dispensed of today so easily. And, Robert Saleh is a former 49ers defensive coordinator. He's the head coach now in his third year with the Jets. They have Nathaniel Hackett from Green Bay, who obviously was who failed as a head coach and was fired before the season ended in Denver last year, replaced by Sean Payton, criticized by Sean Payton since subsequently. And Rodgers has, Randall Cobb and several other of his, former receivers. Alan Lazard is there. So I think it will not be that difficult for Rodgers to make the transition. And Sean McDermott, the Buffalo head coach who's calling the plays on defense, was talking about how hard it is to get a sense for what those two are going to do with the players that they have. So it'll be a team that the Cowboys are not very familiar with, but led by a quarterback and some receivers who they've had a lot of recent history with, and most of it not good.
Yeah, that is accurate, and the whole thing I think is going to be a fascinating week. And Ed, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention to you that my high school team, my daughter's high school team, she's a varsity cheerleader, pulled off an enormous upset Friday night. They had to wait and finish it Saturday afternoon because of a lightning delay. But the mighty Lake Highlands Wildcats, led by new coach Corey Campbell, took down the mighty Highland Park Scots, 51-41, and it's one of the great victories. It's a first win for Lake Highlands over Highland Park since 1989, and they hadn't played the whole time, but still, huge deal. And so, anyway, I just wanted to mention that to you, Ed.
That was a real nice segue right out of the Jets, Cowboys, Rodgers, Dak, right into what's Steven's son's name? Played football there. Played football for the legendary coach at
Randy Allen's the legendary coach, and the son who went to Arkansas. His last name is Jones.
Steven something Jones. John Steven. He was a good high school player.
He was great. He was great, and he's now part of the team. And Jerry leans on all his grandsons heavily in the draft room, as we've seen as well. All right, Ed, thank you for embracing that, and appreciate everything you've done this evening, all your travels, and best of luck to you. I don't know if you're going to be on the Dion beat, but after two big noon kickoffs, ESPN Game Day now headed to Colorado to cover Colorado State, Colorado. I mean, no offense to the place. I mean, I think you have one of your several homes in the near Colorado State, but normally would not qualify for an ESPN Game Day, but that's where they are. So Dion has changed.
I don't think
everything.
It's a great development for Colorado State, to be honest with you.
To have the spotlight on them suddenly.
Yeah, I think they'd like to have laid low, maybe close the gates, not really, you know, kind of have a close practice and call it a game. But we'll see. Yeah. Never know.
All right. Ed, good work.
But I will be at the game next week. I've been assigned the Cowboys Jets, so hopefully you'll be there. We'll be in a suite afterward, and we'll be talking about how the Cowboys and Jets fared.
That sounds good, Ed, and appreciate all your work and appreciate the fact that people can see us. This will be up on our YouTube channel, and people have asked, we want to see Werder when he's talking to us, and so we have now made that happen. For Ed Werder and Frito Nation Productions, Mark Frito Friedman, and Glenn Stretchsmith, I'm Matt Mosley. Good night from far north Dallas.
Well, Christmas lights are shining, stockings have been hung.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.